When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to Fit and Proper. I'm Rhys James.
And I'm Lloyd Griffith.
Each week, we delve into the murky world of football club ownership. We're giving control to our famous guests to run their beloved club in their own way.
They can do whatever they like, from changing the manager to moving the stadium closer to their house, sacking the mascot to insisting all their players have blue dreadlocks.
But their decisions will be scrutinised heavily, just like a real owner. Firstly, by Lloyd and I, and then our supercomputer, which will analyse the data and decide if they are a fit and proper person to run a football club. Welcome back. You may have listened yesterday to part one of the Ellis James episode, in which Ellis told us all about his prowess as a bagsman, an incredible footballer, and his prowess as a Swansea City fan. He's a massive Jack. He follows them everywhere, doesn't he, Lloyd?
Arguably the most famous Jack out there. No offence, yeah. Catherine Zeta-Jones or Michael
Sheen. Yeah, they're not confirmed. They're not going
Michael
to the
Douglas.
Games enough to be considered. Well, now this is part two, where we have the opportunity to find out what Ellis would do if he was in charge as owner of the Swans.
And it is beautiful.
Oh, it's sensational. Enjoy. Well, what perfect timing, Ellis.
Great, I mean, poker face.
It's just starting to sound like they needed a new owner. I was just getting some intel from some outside sources that the ownership weren't that interested and you were treading water, was a phrase I heard. So it's good that you've managed to take it. How much did it set you back then to get your childhood club?
40 million quid.
40 million quid?
Yeah. But the good news is I've got a huge amount of money to invest.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. How did you get the funds?
I've written the ultimate novel about sex.
Okay.
Because I realised that nothing sells like sex. So
sex sells.
It took me about 6 months of hard graft. I didn't do fancy football league. I wasn't doing my other podcasts. I wasn't doing gigs or anything. So I've written a bonkbuster, and it is selling millions. So, you know, it was Lady Chatterley's Lover in the 60s. It was 50 Shades of Grey about a decade ago. But I've written the new one.
Was it right? Okay.
And you see people reading it on the beach. You see people buying it at airports. It's massive. The kind of people who don't often read and might not have read a book since school are buying my book because it's sultry, it's sexy.
Have you written it under your name or have you used this?
My name. Yeah. And all the proceeds are going towards the club. So I'm an executive director. I'm being paid quite well. But, you know, I'm earning an awful lot.
What is the book called for anyone that might want to buy it and help the proceeds?
The book is called Shagging.
Shagging!
Oh, no nonsense. None of this cryptic nonsense.
Yeah. No.
Shagging.
It's Shagging.
So and it's book, a novel.
It's a novel. There's sex on pretty much every page.
And is there any kind of subtext or nuance in there? Or is
There's no subtext and there's almost no plot.
No, it's just shagging.
It's just shagging. But it's very... It's very explicit.
And have you been, dominating the charts in the sort of Richard Osman way?
Yeah.
You've just been number one nonstop.
I've knocked him off the charts, off the
He's
top of the charts.
To be seen,
He's nowhere to be seen.
Are you the new Paul Raymond? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, but I've had my idea for the next one. So when the money for this one eventually runs out,
I was hoping you'd say dry out there, but
I think the sequel's going to be big. So I'm really looking forward to writing my second one, and then I can just put money into the club.
Is it a sex novel that's popular with men and women alike?
Yeah,
Often they're not.
There is something in it for everyone.
Right. Okay.
It's the first book that appeals to literally everyone over the age of 16.
And how do you feel
16,
that? Yeah, but I like that, the clarification there. Or 18 in different countries.
Or 18 in different countries.
Parts of North America, for example. How do you feel that's going to affect maybe sort of chance from rival clubs on the terraces, that this is how you're funded?
I tell you what will affect chance from rival clubs is just how successful we are when I put all of the money into the club. I've done something slight that could potentially set us back in that. I don't know if you've ever been to the Welsh Folk Museum at St. Fagans. Where they will rebuild like a shepherd's hut, brick by brick. But they've just rebuilt the Vulcan pub from Cardiff. When the Vetch was knocked down, there was talk, because the centre stand had been there for about 100 years, there was talk that they were going to rebuild the centre stand at St. Fagans, but they never got around to it. However, I've rebuilt the Vetch, so we've moved back to...
Oh, great.
We've left the Swansea.com, the Liberty Stadium. The ground is, as I remember it, because I think that standing is the best way to watch football. And, you know, if you listen to this podcast and you've got sort of an Ellis James bingo card straight in, there's terracing on three sides of the ground. But to be honest, if I'm being fined by UEFA, I can pay the money because of my sex book. Money is not an option.
My sex book is such a good catchphrase to have to back up everything you want. It's fine because of my sex book.
Yeah.
Good God. Okay, fine. So you're moving back.
We're moving back.
Bringing back standing.
Yeah,
paying
yeah.
So the fines.
If you want a cup of coffee, you've got to buy it from the West Stand, from the giant jar of Kenko that was where you bought your coffee from in the West Stand. It was an actual thing. Yeah, that was an actual thing. So you had the Monster Munch North Bank, and then you had this massive sort of 8-foot jar of Kenko with a sort of an old lady in it, and she would sell you coffee. Yeah, in the jar.
Oh, right.
So, so it's all of those tiny little details that, and the fact that the East Stand was sort of curved round, but only about halfway, because it was never finished because of the houses behind. They were going to build the East End, which was the modern stand at the Vetch. They were going to build the whole ground like that, but then they just ran out of money. So we just had this sort of half modern stand.
And you've got unlimited money, of course, because of your sex book. Do you want to finish what they couldn't start?
No, because it was
starting to sound like your sex book now.
Because it was perfect as it was.
Right. So you want it to be exactly as it was.
Exactly as it was. But I will extend the North Bank back to its former glory. So I think the ground will have a capacity of about 18 or 19,000.
So is the North Bank is the one that's kind of, it had the covering at one point, didn't it? Is that right?
Yeah. It was
two thirds of the side. Is that right?
Well, usually the North Bank was where the cameras were for the telly, so it was run along one side of the pitch. Because usually the most vocal set of supporters, they will stand by in a goal. Mm-hmm. We were actually on the sort of on one side of the pitch. So that's where our most vocal supporters stood. The away end, sponsored by European Profiles when I was watching the club, never knew what European Profiles was or is. That was known as the double decker, but then they condemned the top of the double decker. The council said it was unsafe in about 1990. So rather than rebuild the stand, they just lopped off the top tier, which gave it a really weird shape. But if you stood in the bottom tier then and looked up, there were all these stairwells and gangways to nowhere.
Oh God!
It was quite spooky. It was quite spooky.
But you I just have love a spooky stadium.
It's a spooky
fun
stadium, and that is worth 10 points a season.
We were spooked. We were spooked by the Vetch. What do you expect? How can we win at the Vetch? Yeah. Okay, so are you going to go retro with lots of it? Are you going to go back to like old kits, old sponsors, and stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to old kits, slightly modify them. I really like the Lecoq Sportif Evening Post kit we had in the 90s.
Do not see Lecoq Sportif enough, and never has a brand name gone more perfectly with your business.
Yeah. But the one thing I would do, the Lecoq Sportif kit suffered terribly with what I call 90s baggy sleeve syndrome. Where if you put on those kits, the sleeves are absolutely massive. So it's fine if you're like a strong man like Eddie Hall. But if you're built normally, they just flap and they're not very aerodynamic. So I would modify the sleeves. That's one thing I'm going to be doing.
So that's 96, 97. That's the okay.
It's a really nice looking kit.
I quite like the one the season before. Still look Oxford teeth, but it had it was Gulf, wasn't it? Any other stripes?
Oh yes, yeah, Gulf oil.
Oh yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, the away kit is nice with that. The other thing I'm doing, this is where I'm splashing my money out. There is a vile, pernicious myth propagated by Cardiff City fans to wind us up. It actually does wind us. Well, it certainly winds me up, and so I probably shouldn't admit to this on the podcast. There's a vile, pernicious, poisonous myth propagated by Swansea City fans. By Cardiff City fans that we are scruffy and that we're badly dressed, which isn't true. However, to nip that myth in the bud, to completely destroy this once and for all, with my sex book money, if you buy a season ticket or if you become a Jack Army member so that you can buy tickets for away games, you are then given a bursary of £15,000 to buy clothes. You're then, should you need it, given a further bursary of £5,000 for orthodontic treatment. So we're going to be, I'm leaving no stone unturned. No one can take the piss out of us. So for instance, when I go to football, it's a working class catwalk. It's peacockery. Mm. And when we played Cardiff in the Premier League in the South Wales Derby at their place, we lost 1-0. It was a picture of the away end. I'd bought a new coat for that game. I was doing my bit, but then
there was a
clip of our fans. It must have been after they'd scored, and we're all sort of standing there, ashen face, with our hands over our mouths. And there was one bloke, and I'm not having a go at the guy. I don't know him. I'm sure he's a very nice bloke, but he was wearing the kind of hoodie that you would wear if you had COVID. And some Cardiff City fans on Twitter, they sort of screenshot him. They were enlarging the photo. They're like, oh, that's Swansea all over. Look how scruffy this guy is. So I'm sure he's a very nice guy and he'll be very well turned out at games in the future with the £15,000 bursary. Now, if he's not interested in clothes, my friend Pete is an impeccably well-dressed, always very well turned out. I know he's got a job, but I've not cleared this with him yet. It's his job. He'll be a sort of queer eye for the straight guy person, and he'll be helping you spend your £15,000. My friend Richard Williams, all very well turned out. Last time I saw him was at Bournemouth away. His trainers 10 on 10, his jeans 10 on 10, his coat 10 out of 10. Again, Richard's got a job, but he'll be leaving that and he'll be taking on new role where he'll be dressing our supporters when you need a little bit of help as a stylist.
And you're going to say, you're not concerned if you're just giving 15 grand as a bursary. Should it be in vouchers to specific shops so
yes,
they can't go wrong?
Absolutely. It has, I'm not paying anyone's mortgage.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
This
has to be spent on clothes.
But even if it was just for clothes, would you not be concerned that they're going to go to all the wrong shops? They're going to buy all the wrong
of course.
Stuff?
Yeah, that's why you need these guys in.
That's where Pete and Rich
are going to help. You know, there's. Nice. I'll have a look at you, and if I think that you need a little bit of guidance, I'll send you to Pete or Rich.
Can I ask if what happens if people turn up to the game and they haven't dressed up? Is there some?
Well, they're not allowed in.
All right, so there's a policy.
I'm bringing back turnstile operators for that reason, who are fashion police.
Yeah,
because
sort of
the
bouncers,
whole
no trainers allowed kind of.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
obviously
yeah.
You
well,
are allowed trainers here.
Of course you are. Yeah, but
gazelles ideally.
Yeah, so using barcodes in turnstiles. Mm-hmm. I'm getting rid of that. We never had that at the Vetch anyway, so I'm bringing back turnstile operators and they won't let you in unless you're well turned out. We're going to be the best dressed set of football fans in the UK.
How do the turnstile operators have to dress?
They'll be wearing high-vis.
They're just normal.
They can wear what they want underneath, but obviously they're wearing high-vis because they're turnstile operators. But yeah, I've always hated this myth. It's become... Cardiff City fans, when it comes to this, their messaging is very consistent and they're getting it out there. And I've just decided to completely end this once and for all. So, yeah, it's going to cost me a lot of money, but I've got endless money because of the sex book.
What I would say, Ellis, is the fact that you are doing so much about this issue does imply that it is in no way a myth. You keep calling it a myth, and yet you're giving 15 grand to everyone who comes to the games to fix this, inverted commas, lie.
Also quite like the fact that you're giving orthodontal treatment as well to various people. Like, yeah, you haven't even touched on that.
Should they need it?
Is
well,
there a myth about people with bad teeth?
No, but, you know, you've only got to walk down any high street in Wales to see that. Sure. I would say it's a British-wide problem. But yeah, right. I'm giving people this money for the avoidance of doubt, so that no one who hears this will be able to go, oh yeah, that sounds plausible. They'll be like, and Swans, aren't they the club that the Sexbook guy gives all of the fans?
They're the sexiest group of fans in the world.
The best dressed,
they're the best dressed fans ever.
I honestly think that one person would be very grateful for this is Mark Drakeford, who'll be absolutely over the moon. the way like everyone has just got perfect teeth in the Swansea area.
Yeah,
he'll be over the moon.
Draco. Absolutely, just done. Sorted.
Are there any rumours or myths about Cardiff fans that are propagated by Swansea fans?
Or that you'd maybe like to start?
That they eat food from bins.
Is that genuinely one? Yeah, or is this just you trying to get one off the ground?
That they went to Rome to see the Pope and the Pope told them to fuck off. That's my favourite one. God, is it? You went to Rome to see the Pope, and this is what he said. Fuck off! Who's that team called Swansea?
Wait, I mean,
because
where did that chant come from?
Because we have the blessing of the Vatican, Lloyd. Who's that team called Swansea? Who's that team called Swansea? And they play in black and white, and they're fucking dynamite. Yeah, Cardiff City's falling down. Poor old Cardiff. All that kind of stuff. And that they're just scum is the other one. And that they'll never be the Jacks. It's a very, very competitive derby, the South Wales derby. And the league double had never been done in over 110 years of the fixture. And we did it last year and then we did it again this year. And our fans will sing when we're beaten them. It's happened again. It's happened again. And there's something for the way tonally. I love the way we take the piss in that sense. It really, really makes me laugh.
Who's going to be your manager, Alice? Like, you've hit the sartorial dressings. Early doors. Obviously, that's the priority. You're straightening teeth, but who's going to straighten the team?
Right.
I'm not sure if that's a phrase.
Well, with Russell Martin, we've lost him now, so this is all academic.
He's going, at time of record, is he gone or is he going?
He's going.
Yeah, he's going.
He will go, and he's going.
Going to Leeds United?
To Southampton.
Oh, wow, okay.
So our fans, believe it or not, and I love this about the club, are very, very... picky and fussy about the kind of football we play. And that is usually something that's associated with Premier League teams. I think Tottenham are probably the best example I can think of, in terms of Spurs fans have always wanted, you know, the ball to be played on the floor since the Bill Nicholson era and winning the double in 1961. West Ham fans are a bit like that to an extent.
I think Spurs fans would happily, you know, kind of draw games for all, as long as...
Yes,
this is
absolutely
why the Conte was so unpopular, is because it was like, even when we were kind of winning in the half a season, then we got us top four, there was no moments where you got to stand up. There was like one shot a game and we'd score that one shot.
And I've always had a real affection for Tottenham for that, because there's something so glamorous about really caring about the way the football is actually played. And I would say that most clubs, certainly in the lower leagues, could not give a toss about how, you know, as long as you're winning, that's all that matters. Our fans are immensely fussy about this, and they like possession-based passing football. So Steve Cooper was never particularly popular, even though we got to the playoffs twice under him in 2 years, because the football could be very pragmatic. You know, a lot of people think it started with Roberto Martinez, but I've talked to much older fans who are like, oh no, we've been like this since the 50s, because the 50s team that had Cliff Jones, who went on to play for Tottenham, and Ivor Allchurch, they played attractive football. And they never quite got to the first division. They would run out of steam in their sort of promotion pushes. But the football they played was quite attractive. So, however, when Russell Martin was doing that, I think we gave away 18 points from sort of winning or drawing positions in the last 10 minutes of games. So if we hadn't been so obsessively trying to play the ball up from the back in the final 10 minutes of matches, we'd have gone up possibly automatically. So then our forums became very, very poisonous, people arguing about the kind of football we should be playing. So rather than having a manager, tactically, it's all going to be decided on the forums. And substitutions will be done via Twitter polls. Because right. I was reading these forum posts, you know, like 20-page arguments where people are having a go at each other and all this kind of stuff. And even though I play football, I know nothing about football, really. Like, if I was a manager for an hour, the club would probably get relegated. So it never fails to amaze me how people who've often got no background in the game at all will quite happily go on to football fan forums or sometimes social media and say, well, what we need is more asymmetrical overloads because we're losing the ball in transition. I'm like, where are you getting this from?
Yeah.
Football is chaos. It's men running around or women running around. It's just, they're running around. How can you tell that we've gone from a 4-2-3-1 to a 4-5, what would that be?
One.
You know, it never fails to amaze me that you sort of sometimes you'll be sitting next to people and you'll hear them muttering. And it's like they've read Inverting the Pyramid by Jonathan Wilson or the Michael Cox book on Premier League tactics, and they're just spewing it out. And I think, all right, then, well, if you're going to get that aggrieved and that angry with the manager, you do it. So we're going to be the.
So do you do it in a one by? Is it in like everyone takes it in turns, kind of jury duty style from the forum? Or is it like a. Democracy.
It's a democracy.
So it's all a democracy. Votes.
It's all votes.
So it's a Twitter poll that's done within what? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
The substitutions will be Twitter polls because obviously, you know, if it's in a game, you need to make decisions quickly. The tactics and the shape and how we're setting up for a game on a Saturday, that's decided on the forums during the week and it's a democracy. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, that's what you get because we've tried different managers. And we're still in the championship. We haven't been promoted back to the Premier League. And everyone is very, very angry because everyone on the forum is angry. And I say that as an ex frontline soldier in the forum wars of the 2000s.
Really? What did you actually, you dedicated actual time
I
on the forums?
Thousands of hours on those forums.
Fucking hell.
In the 2000s, that was my sort of, that was my zenith slash nadir, depending on which way you look at it, for forum use.
Okay, let me ask you this, Ellis. What was your username?
Gravy and Chips Jack.
Wow, not Gravy and Chips Jack 1? It hadn't been taken?
No, it hadn't been taken. So, yeah, I used to go on...
Gravy and Chips Jack. I used to go with his on. Sex book.
I used to go on... Jack Army, that was the forum. I used to use scfc.net a little bit, but Jack Army was the main one I used to go on. And I was an occasional lurker on the Cardiff City forums as well, because the one thing that happens...
Lurker.
Actually, occasional lurker. I was on them as much, and I would occasionally post. But the thing with clubs that are stuck in the lower divisions that have got quite a big dormant support, which I think is so true of Cardiff and Swansea, is that you end up in these cyclical arguments about which club is biggest. So do you have this with Grimsby, Lloyd? Who are your main rivals?
It changes all the time. Depends who kind of like we're in close contention with. So the last few years, it's been Scunthorpe. But in previous years, it's been Lincoln. Doncaster have been known, but we've never...
And then will you argue about which is the bigger club?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, and what are you using? What are your sort of...
So let's just take well, at the moment Scunthorpe United have just been relegated to the Conference North, which is actually quite sad. So
yeah,
you know, it's stadium capacity,
of course,
where we are in the league.
Yeah.
Trophies
and history.
Yeah, trophies and history. Yeah.
Worldwide fan base.
Yes, and the big one is away following.
Oh, we are biggest by a fucking country mile.
So they've just announced the average away followings for the championship. And my friend John and I are obsessed with away followings. I'm often more interested in the away following than the score. I'm absolutely fascinated by how many people go away. And I have to know. And if I can't find out, I will text people at the club because I just have to know. And Cardiff's away following this season, I think they had about they average about 100 more than we did. So we're both over 1,000, but they were about 100 more than we. The point I was constantly making as a frontline soldier during the forum was the 2000s was Cardiff's basically 50 miles closer to all football clubs than we are. And so that's a 100 mile round trip extra. And a lot of our fans come from West Wales, which is even further still. So we're having to travel further. So if you're dividing it, people by miles traveled, then we will always win. And I was making this point constantly during the forum wars of the 2000s, which have now simmered down because I've had children. So to end this, because they beat us by about 100 last season, being an away fan at the Swans will now be like national service. It will be absolutely compulsory. And we will fill our away allocation wherever we go. To be honest, as a club owner, I will rule with an iron fist. But yeah, if you're getting 15 grand to spend on clothes and orthodontic treatment, I think, you know, making you go to Middlesbrough every now and then isn't actually that bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fee. It's basically just a fee.
Yeah.
But it is, there's some elements here of a sort of, there's a sort of communist element to all of this.
Yes.
I'd say, which is,
and it worked,
look, I'll treat you well, but you do need to wear this uniform and you do need to be here at certain times.
And your teeth have to be perfectly white. Yeah, straight.
And I will not accept dissent.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And you have to read my shagging manual, please.
Oh, and are all the tactics outsourced to the people? Sorry, have we decided to go fully socialist with the rest of it? And just go, no, we all just decide there's no... So you're ruling with an iron fist, but you're making kind of no decisions on the pitch at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How does training work then? At what point in the week do you establish the tactics for you to then train those tactics? Or do you not bother with that?
It will sort of... So if the game is on a Saturday... Sunday obviously is a rest and recovery day, but that's when the forums will really go into overdrive. Mm. I, along with my team, will assess all of the different forum posts on the Sunday evening, and then I will tell the manager the person who's putting the cones out. Yeah. I'll tell him or her on the Monday morning, this is what the supporters want. Enact that. So it might be a little bit like Ian Holloway, where apparently he would watch Champions League highlights, like, here, that Borussia Dortmund are good. We're going to play at Borussia Dortmund. And then he would set his team up to play at Borussia Dortmund, and then they would lose. And then he'd watch Champions League highlights again. He'd be like, here, that Barcelona are good. And he'd set them up to play like Barcelona. So, yeah, the players are going to have to be very, very adaptable and versatile.
Can I just say, when Grimsby Town were managed by Ian Holloway, there was a situation where he basically brought in a YouTube video and went, here, this goalkeeper can throw far, can't he? And they went, is he any good at... like stopping shots, went, I don't know, look how far you can throw. And then made a genuine inquiry for him.
Well, we, during our really, really chaotic period in the 1990s, well, the 80s and 90s was chaotic, but when we had the five managers in one season, was it six? I think it was five. We at one point employed a man who's since gone on to become a convicted fraudster.
Lovely.
A man called Kevin Cullis, who'd only ever managed a youth team in the West Midlands. So he sent his CV, if you can call it that, of his youth team exploits and achievements. And our board were like, look at this. Oh, my God. His teams are winning games 25-0. And they employed him, and he lasted less than a week. And he was effectively sacked by the sort of players at half-time during a game. Well, I think it was Christian Edwards was the captain, and he said, right, we're not listening to him anymore because he's an idiot who manages a youth team in the West Midlands. We're going to go back to 4-4-2. We're going to be playing this. You're going to be standing there. You're going to be standing there. And then the captain did it. And it was like a consort, sort of a collaboration of the players decided to just set up and ignore the manager, and then he had to tender his resignation. So yeah, it was a low ebb in a decade of low ebbs.
Right. Using youth team stats of scorelines. Obviously it's all.
Yeah. But
also, he's playing an 11-0-0 format. Yeah, that his tactics are 11 up front, everyone just chasing the ball at all times.
Yeah, and a boy who's a year older than he claims to be.
Yeah.
And you could tell because you've got hairier legs than the other lads.
What other things are you implementing here, Ellis? I'm sure you've obviously got a list of stuff. Usually we have to prompt the guests, but it looks like you're referring to a notebook.
We're re-entering the Welsh Cup. We haven't been able to enter the Welsh Cup since 1994-95, when Welsh football was sort of reorganised in a way it's too boring for me to go into now, because it's always annoyed me that Cardiff and Wrexham have won it far more times than the Swans. So we're going to re-enter the Welsh Cup, which will allow us to get into Europe. We can have some great away days again in Europe, which would be fun.
And meet the Pope.
Yeah, I only really want us to be in Europe until we've won it more times than Cardiff and Wrexham, and then we can sort of bow out gracefully and concentrate on our league position.
Are they still in it? Are they still in the...
No. So the Welsh clubs that play in the English system aren't allowed in the Welsh Cup.
Okay.
So Cardiff, Swansea, Wrexham, Newport County and Merthyr.
Merthyr
are in the sixth or seventh tier.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. So they were a really good conference team at the end of the 80s, early 90s, when you could compete in the Welsh Cup and it would get you into the European Cup Winners' Cup.
Wow.
And they famously beat Atalanta. So,
wow.
And if, I think I'm going to get this right, if Napoli hadn't won the double, they would have played Napoli, so Maradona would have come to Pennadaro.
Oh my God.
But yeah, they beat Atalanta 2-1 at home. But lost 2-0 away, so they didn't go through. But yeah, because the Welsh Cup, it threw up these odd fixtures and odd results. So Bangor City beat Napoli. Merthyr beat Atalanta. Newport County got to the quarterfinals of the European Cup Winners' Cup.
Wow.
Cardiff City beat Real Madrid. There's sort of these odd little, I think, did Wrexham beat Porto and drew with Anderlecht, something like that. But, you know, in sort of one-off cup games, weird things happen. I think my favourite is Bangor City beating Napoli. I mean, that is, considering they're the current Italian champions. I think what I am doing, though, again, this is part of my rule with an iron fist method. This speaks to a very, very privileged upbringing, but one of the things that annoys and angers me most is people under the age of 38 denigrating and criticising Ian Rush. So it really, really bothers me, people who are slightly younger than me not remembering just how good Ian Rush was. Especially in the mid-80s when he was the best number nine in the world. He scored 47 goals in the 83-84 season, won the European Cup, won the European Golden Boot. I think he only scored one penalty that season. But people of the age of 35 who just remember his time at Leeds and Newcastle and Wrexham saying he was shit, that's I've banned that. So you're unable to discuss him in the ground unless you are... Unless it's positive and you're willing to do it respectfully.
How's that being policed?
Stewards with tasers and batons.
Wow, okay.
Stewards with tasers and
propaganda.
Batons. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how you feel about cryogenics. I don't know if cryogenics is a word because obviously Ian Rush isn't dead. But if I could bring back 83-84 Ian Rush to play up front, that is the dream.
You can, of course you can.
Okay, well then, the absolutely deadly Ian Rush from 1983-84, who was the best striker in the world, the best number nine in the world, certainly, best poacher, he's playing up front. And then people will give him the respect they deserve amongst the sort of millennial
So is your issue is more the sort of 35-year-olds rather than, say, the sort of Andrew Mensahs of the world from Fantasy Football League, who would say, I'm better than Ian Rush. If I was around at that time playing against fat plumbers, I would have been able to dribble around everyone and score. It's the
really,
sort of thing he'd say.
I mean, with Mensah, because obviously Mensah doesn't recognise football pre-1990, just sort of doesn't think it counts. That is an argument. That's a slightly different argument. The one that actually annoys me most is people who only remember the tail end of his career and who don't remember the deadly marksman Ian Rush. It's those ones who'll point to his career at Elland Road and St James's Park and say he was crap, wasn't he? He was just a bit old and shit. no, you haven't done the background reading. And I need people to do the background reading.
Ellis, I hope you don't mind this. It's maybe a little bit too psychoanalytical for this podcast. Do you feel you're projecting? We started this episode talking about how you are a bagsman, but you do maybe feel things are fading, you're getting older. Are you concerned slightly that people won't remember you as the poacher you once were?
Reese, Izzy's left me, man.
Yeah,
she
okay.
just said I was emotionally
that
distant.
The sort of attic you're in at the moment.
constantly talking about Ian Rush. She hasn't done the background reading. A couple of weeks ago, she snapped. She said, I can't do this anymore. The children are being educated in an almost exclusively Ian Rush-based household. So, yeah, there's a little bit of projecting going on there, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and now you're available on Tuesday to do a football podcast and go and play football immediately after, you know.
Yeah, things are going really well for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you actually are writing a book about sex. That's just what I think you genuinely are.
Love to have it again.
I'd love to have it again.
It's a picture book.
Shagging. Shagging by Ellis James.
Ian Rush, in the years 80 to 86, whilst playing for Liverpool, played 182 times, and this is according to Wikipedia, played 182 times, scored 109 goals.
Oh, he was an absolute monster. He was an absolute monster. And there was this bizarre odd stat where in a game that Liverpool played, where in a Liverpool game where Ian Rush played, if he scored, they didn't lose. And that record continued for years and years. So he had this odd sort of mythical hold over opposition defences. He was completely lethal until about 1990, I would say. He was easily one of the best strikers in the world. But then he, like all players did in those days, he carried on for too long. Nowadays, he would do what Bale did and retire at 33 and everyone would just remember how good he had been. And he didn't have a great time at Juventus for a variety of different reasons, which are an addendum sort of at the end of my shagging book. So there really is something for everyone in my shagging book.
And are there any other old players that you bring back that you want to play? Getting a look in?
Trundle's going to be in. And Lee Trundle's just left Ammanford, so he has got a club. He needs a club. He wants to carry on playing.
I played football with Lee Trundle last week.
Did you?
Week before last, yeah. Unbelievable footballer.
Oh, amazing.
Just in case you needed any.
Far higher level.
Oh, he was, my God.
But he was a classic sort of, he was almost like a 70s showman. Like he would go down easily, get a penalty, and then he would do like a big theatrical pantomime wink at the Swans fans in the away end. He was just rolling the ball on his shoulders, all that kind of stuff.
So
great
good.
Fun to watch.
So good.
So Trund is playing, Rush is playing. Again, don't know how you feel about cryogenics. John Charles is playing because he was on the books as a schoolboy but went to Leeds, so he never actually played a first team game for Swansea. So John Charles is straight in the side as well.
Obviously, nice. Swansea are called the Jacks. Keeping Jacks?
Yeah, like the nickname. Yeah. Also a big fan of Cyril the Swan. He's not quite as roguish a figure as he was, as he once was, when he ripped off Zampa the Lion's head and sort of drop kicked it along the pitch. and they had to bring in, the FA had to bring in guidelines for behaviour for all mascots because he was he was causing such aggro in the crowd. But yeah, big fan of Cyril. Like the club's social media team. Like the nickname. To be honest, there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't change, but the things I will change, they mean an awful lot to me.
No, fair enough. The smartest fans in the UK.
Yeah.
Crest, are you keeping? What are you doing with the badge?
We've just bought back the crest from my childhood. Which is something, it's the kind of thing that football clubs tend not to do because football fans are very, very nostalgic creatures. But they've just bought back the 80s crest with a slight modification. So I like that. So I'm keeping the crest as well.
Is the one in the circle?
Yeah.
With the blue background.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating that it's a really cool badge, but it looks like something from a sort of cartoon.
It is quite 80s.
Yeah. And it's a massive swan on top of a castle, a tiny castle.
It's the one we had in the Premier League was probably a more modern looking badge, but for once they've just listened to us and gone.
But that Premier League one, it's quite corporate.
Very corporate.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a football badge to me.
No, I like my badges to be sort of quite old fashioned, like the sort of crest that a town would have.
Yeah,
that sort of a mayor would have
a coat of arms.
Yeah, you'd see it on the flag, on a car
or on a mayor's gown.
Lovely.
Yeah, that modern badge you had was like it looks like a soap company.
I was actually going to say it looks like the logo for a retirement home by a river.
Just like, the old one's much better. Yeah, that's okay. Bringing that back, that goes with the kit as well.
Also, that blue is just such a lovely blue. The colours that they've used are really, really, really nice.
Oh, they've done really, really well, and I'm glad. And because I like that badge so much, and I'm scared that they're going to get rid of it and go back to the more corporate looking one.
Oh, no.
No, it just means I've bought an awful lot of merch and a lot of gear. So I've gone from being dressed quite normally to sort of having a full kit life.
Will you be wearing full kit of football today?
I'll certainly be wearing the shorts. Yeah. I don't know what top I'm going to wear yet, but it's all to play for.
And what about club motto? Is there a current? What's Swansea's current club motto?
We don't have a club motto, actually.
Do you not?
We don't have a Latin one. You know, like. Some clubs have. I think the crest that's I'm happy with all of that stuff.
But would you not implement one with your new kind of like obviously being sartorially sharp? Not dressed to impress, I think that's a very, you know, cliche.
What about shagging our way to the top?
Yeah.
Shaggers and baggers.
Shaggers and baggers. Oh my God.
Do you know what? I'll have it in Welsh. So I'll have llwyddiant trwy rhyw, which means success through sex.
Success through sex. My God.
Very lovely.
Perfect.
Lovely.
Fair enough. And is there any rules, any sort of like specific rules you want to impose on any of the players or staff or anything other than, of course, we know the fans can't slander Ian Rush.
Yeah, the fans can't slander Ian Rush. They've just got to do what the fans want, because I don't think any club has ever been run in this way. And it's one of those experiments that could either succeed gloriously or fail terribly. But I am willing to take that chance, because to be honest, the club, financially, the club is safe anyway because of my enormous fortune.
Sure.
So certainly we're going to give it one season where the fans decide what happens on the pitch, and we'll see where that takes us. Success through sex.
As I'm sure you were, as a listener of this podcast, Ellis, the supercomputer decides as to whether you are fit and proper to take over Swansea City. But it also shows, gives us a few little community chest cards to see how you deal with being the chair and owner of a football club. The supercomputer has just thrown up a scenario, and Rhys is going to read that for you.
Yeah. Supercomputer says, the day before the biggest game of the season, in a bout of cruel irony, a swan breaks your goalkeeper's arm. And then your substitute keeper's arm and your reserve and under-21s and under-18s and under-16 keeper's arms. Turns out that swans hate gloves. With no registered keepers left on the books and not wanting the fans to know that you took the entire playing staff to a very dangerous public lake for a picnic the day before the match, what do you do to cover up the scandal and how do you find a goalkeeper in time?
Always a big fan of tall strikers going in goal. The best example I can think of is Niall Quinn. I remember him saving a penalty from Dean Saunders. And Niall Quinn used to bet players at the end of training that he'd be able to save their penalties because he was a quite useful goalkeeper.
Really?
So there must be a striker or a centre-half who fancies himself as a goalkeeper. So they're the goalkeeper I'm putting in. And they've got to change into the top on the pitch as well. That's a big part of it.
Okay, lovely.
You don't see enough of that anymore.
No, I love
it. I love watching it. Seeing a goalkeeper's top, but with like, and it used to happen in the 90s the whole time. Goalkeepers would just have a different top and would wear the outfield shorts of the rest of the team.
Yeah.
I loved that.
So that's definitely happening. In terms of covering up the fact that I took the entire first team squad for a dangerous lake-based lunch, you have to remember, I rule with an iron fist. So I can do what I want. And also, I've got my own magazines, my own club literature that is putting out my own messaging. And sure, it's going to be lies. But I am the person who's in charge of truth.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I'm reading a lot of books about the Soviet Union at the moment. So I think it's all seeping. It's all seeping through.
You're controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
So there is no there is no narrative that's anti you.
Yeah, and my friend Stephen writes a fanzine at the club. I like Stephen a lot, and I love his fanzine. But if he is a dissenting voice, he will be neutralized.
Neutralized.
Some people are starting to suspect that that you control the swans, you know, so that they will break your arm if you if you criticize.
Yeah. They're robotic swans, Reese.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, good to know.
For there's robotic out loud, swans do out there the maths
that will break your arm if you criticize Ellis or Ian Rush.
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay, fine. Well, I think we've got all the data that we need. That's all the insight we need to see for the supercomputer to analyze it and see if you're a fit and proper person to run Swansea. So, Lloyd, if you don't enter the data, please.
Yeah, one second. Let me just. Wow.
What's the verdict?
Fit and proper. Yeah. No issues, no qualms whatsoever. Oh. I think it didn't hear the bit about the robotic swans at the end, which I think is good. But overall, it's
Well, it's a good way around the animal cruelty issue, actually. Just make them robotic.
Absolutely thrilled.
Yeah.
I'm delighted.
Again, the NHS is very happy with what you're doing, throwing money at orthodontics in the South Wales area. There's a few issues with people claiming to be Swansea City fans when in fact they support Airbus in order to just get decent teeth. But overall, absolutely fine. And the money's come from a lovely place as well.
That's
Not the, the main thing was the supercomputer is a big fan of your books.
Oh, great.
Okay. And so, it, you know, what you could have done no wrong because this supercomputer wants a sequel. It's a horny computer. It wants to hear the sex stories of Ellis James.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty more where that came from. So I'm really thrilled, and I'm really looking forward to taking the club into a new and exciting direction.
And let me tell you, we cannot wait to go into the spooky tunnels and stairwells of the away end at the Vetch.
What a classic.
Oh, my God. I mean, that could have gone on for another hour or so.
There's so many things we didn't even get to.
So many things.
Ellis, he's a raconteur. He's got anecdotes. This is what I'm talking about. This is someone who has been a properly loyal football fan for so long and cares about it so much that he just has something to say about absolutely every aspect of it. And often he will say that on the forums under a certain alias.
The way you said it as well. I mean,
fantastic stuff from Ellis. Obviously, Ellis has a ton of podcasts for you to go and listen to.
Yes.
I'm sure you're already aware of this because you've got Socially Distant Sports Bar with Mike Bubbins, among others. He hosts a show on BBC Radio 5 Live with John Robbins that's excellent.
He's a very average goalkeeper.
Okay. Is that what, that's how you want to end this, is it? By just saying John Robbins is an average goalkeeper.
Ellis is a brilliant stand-up as well. So when you can, absolutely absorb all of his stand-up as and when he's gigging and stuff. He's fucking
And if you haven't
brilliant.
Watched it, go and watch Fantasy Football League. It's all available on Sky Catch-Up. And it is great fun. It's Matt Lucas and Ellis and Andrew Mensah. And, you know, most of the episodes are written by yours truly. So if you don't like the jokes, it's not their fault, it's my fault.
As ever, thanks for listening. If you've liked this, please give us a little 5-star rating or a large 5-star rating, however you see fit. Tell your friends, tell your families. I'm sure you're following Ellis on absolutely everything that he's got. So I'm going to go and play football now.
All right. Goodbye.